I think this is a little closer call than Broadway. It's kind of hard to argue with a policy that encourages and honors settlements in lieu of litigation, okay? Absent fraud, I would guess that you would want to recognize the validity of boundary settlements. And it appears here that the parties probably had sufficient information to know what they were signing. It is somewhat of a mystery why the oil and gas lessee Ellison would have signed this boundary stipulation, but he did. And it was actually a successor to Ellison that was challenging it. The Supreme Court of Texas, or I like to call it the Scott, agreed with Concho that imposing a requirement of objective uncertainty, in other words, that there was something wrong with the original deed that would be plain to everybody, was a prerequisite, in a sense, or a condition to making a boundary stipulation. And the court reasoned, I think, pretty convincingly that that would scuttle a boundary stipulation, because the parties who are trying to avoid litigation would then be forced to go into court to get a confirmation that, oh yeah, there was no objective uncertainty in the deed. So I think in that sense, you can say that the case is okay, but there's further problems with the case. Had the court stopped right there and said that boundary stipulations are okay if they're clear and signed by all interested parties, and even a ratification is probably okay if it's clear that the party who signed the ratification had full information, I think the case would be probably unremarkable, maybe. But it would have made somewhat new case law, because, of course, there was old precedent that suggested that ratifications are insufficient because they really don't meet the statute of frauds, or they're not sufficient kind of as a correction instrument. But other than that, probably wouldn't have been such a big deal. But I might add that it probably would be consistent. I mean, the ruling at the court stopped right there with this new approach the Supreme Court has to look to what the parties intend and not to resolve questions on what the court calls arbitrary and mechanical rules. So I suppose we could say, well, this case would all be consistent with that. But I think the harm in the case is that the court goes too far in justifying its decision, see. And courts oftentimes do that. They try to justify and underpin their decisions with additional commentary that probably is not, turns out to be so good. And this is what they did. They cited some old precedent, the Rogers versus Racine cases, and basically said, you know, we did not decide in Rogers versus McCain, one, the first case, that equitable defenses are categorically barred in these kinds of cases, okay, such as a ratification claim in a trespass to try title action. The court said, no, all we held was that laches wasn't available. We didn't say anything about other equitable defenses. And they supported that statement by citing Rogers versus Racine 2, where the court rejected the jury's ratification holding or a ruling, finding, I should say, that the evidence didn't support it, okay? Not that it wasn't available as a defense. And you know, they went on and said, you know, we don't recognize abandonment, which was part of Rogers versus Racine, and that ratification is not abandonment. But then they rejected Ellison's estoppel by deed argument that the party should be bound by recitals in their deed. And they treated that as just another attempt to try and infuse into the standard for this kind of a ratification and boundary stipulations, this objective ambiguity, which was what the majority is trying to get away from. So that's what I think is troubling, is the court's unnecessarily broad assertion about the potential availability of equitable defenses. It makes life miserable for title examiners. In a perverse sort of way, I suppose if these defenses are now available, then perhaps some equitable defenses other than laches, which apparently is out the window because of Rogers versus McCain 1, but perhaps estoppel of some kind, not estoppel by deed, but estoppel in pay, for example, might be available to answer correction instruments that are made long after the original instrument was corrected. So I mean, it could possibly address some of the problems we have with the Broadway case. But it still gives examiners heartburn because there's no way that an examiner can determine or opine on whether or not an equitable defense should be applicable. Now, you're going to hear this afternoon an in-depth discussion of this case by Julie Griffiths, okay? Now, next case is, of course, the old fixed versus floating business.